Willkommen zu Inspired Learning in a Digital World, der Podcast über die Zukunft des Lernens. Mein Name ist Wilma Hartenfels und ich freue mich, dass ihr heute dabei seid. Ich habe heute die wunderbare Amy Lenz im Interview. Amy ist Amerikanerin und sie ist Gründerin von WeDialog, einem Unternehmen, das interaktive virtuelle Trainings und Events produziert. Außerdem ist sie im Vorstand der World Café Community Foundation. Amy hat ein ganz besonderes Verhältnis zum Format des World Café. Sie hat damit schon sehr viel experimentiert und hat es unter anderem in die Welt des Online-Trainings oder der Online-Events gebracht. Und da hat sie schon einige Formate auch in Second Life stattfinden lassen. Und das ist etwas, worüber ich heute mit ihr sprechen werde. Außerdem sprechen wir über interaktive, sehr menschenzentrierte Online-Events. Das Interview findet auf englischer Sprache statt und ich hoffe, dass alles gut verständlich ist. Ich wünsche euch jetzt sehr viel Spaß beim Zuhören. Hello Amy, I'm so happy to have you here today in my podcast. Really so thrilled. Your LinkedIn profile says that your strengths are in creating customized online environments that are beautiful, engaging, and effective, and that your purpose is to catalyze deep connection and true collaboration. That's so interesting. And my first question to you would be, first of all, tell me a little bit about yourself, who you are, and also which kind of online environments are you creating?
Well, it's wonderful to be here. Thank you, Wilma. It's wonderful that a LinkedIn profile could make a connection like this. So that's one kind of, proof of how you can make connections online that are unexpected and
absolutely
kind of wonderful. So my work, I am an adjunct faculty at Fielding Graduate University, which is largely online. I am director of learning programs for the World Cafe Community Foundation. Mm-hmm. And my company, WeDialog, offers online courses for teachers and facilitators and other leaders and professionals who want to bring their work into an online environment in a way that aligns with their values. Mm-hmm. So it's not just the nuts and bolts of how to do it, but really the heart and soul of how to do it, if you will. So my work is really based on the premise that we learn best when we're engaged, mm-hmm. when we're participating, when we're in relationship with each other, in conversation, and particularly in cross-pollinating opportunities.
Cross-pollinating opportunities. What exactly do you mean with that?
Well, I was really influenced by my work with the World Cafe, mm-hmm. which you may or may not know is a process of dialogue and dialogic engagement. And what it's a method. On one level, it's a method. It's a simple method of having conversation that can scale from as little as 12 people to as many as 12,000 or more. But it's based on rotating rounds of conversation with four people in each group. Everybody's talking about the same issue. We've got the same question that we're responding to, but you respond to it in a small group of four, and then you change to another small group of four and either work the same question or one that builds on that. And so you have this, and then after that, you do another round. So you have this cross-pollination of ideas, mm-hmm. and thoughts and, ways of thinking about things, different perspectives. And by the end of three or more rounds, you have a different, you're different. Your perspective is different because you've heard, and part of it is a invitation to listen in a particular way. Mm-hmm. So to listen, to see what there is for you to to learn from a perspective rather than listening to see if you agree with it or not, or listening to respond to it, but just listening to it to see if it's different, all the better, because there's more for you to learn. You know, there's more that's different from you, so more for you to feel into, listen into, tease out. Just exposing yourself to other perspectives and letting yourself be impacted by that. And so that's what I mean by cross-pollination.
Great. Thanks a lot. And from what I have understood from our previous conversation, which actually started next to the train station of Cologne, very spontaneous meeting. I really loved that. On your way to, where were you?
I was on my way to Brussels, from Vienna. Yeah, and we met over.
Absolutely. And what I understood from that discussion, you'd somehow merged the two topics of doing world cafes, which was meant originally in a physical space, also with your experience in designing engaging online experiences. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Sure. So when I first started doing this, the technology for breaking into small groups and having this kind of cross-pollination experience didn't exist. So I had to basically make it up and do a mashup of the existing technology. And it was very complex and unwieldy, but I stuck to it. And over a period of years, I tried different things. I tried different platforms. The platforms evolved and new platforms became available. And I was really, really lucky in the early days of a platform called Maestro Conference, mm-hmm. which was based, you know, a few miles from me in Northern California. They were audio based, so there was no visual component, but they had the vision to put people into breakout rooms. And this was before anybody was doing breakout rooms. I mean, some of the more expensive, really clunky tools, please, no offense to anybody who's associated with them, but, you know, some of the really big companies were doing breakout rooms, but it was so complicated that nobody was actually using them. Mm-hmm. And Maestro Conference made it very easy to go into breakout rooms. And so I started using Maestro Conference and actually having conversations with them about what would make their platform work better for people like myself. And they were just a wonderful, wonderful partner for many, many years. And I used them in association after a while with video conferencing systems that before Zoom came on the horizon, other things like GoToMeeting but still it had to be a mashup with audio coming from Maestro Conference and then breaking into the small groups coming from there and the video giving us a visual connection with each other.
How long ago was that?
I think I'm terrible with dates and things like this, but I think Zoom came on the scene for me around 2015 maybe. Mm-hmm. And this was before Zoom had breakout rooms. And so I started using Zoom rather than something like GoToMeeting, because Zoom takes up much less bandwidth and the video quality is so much better. And I started using that. And then in the same way, I started communicating with the people who are the programmers and people who are running the company at Zoom. And they're very responsive as well to their customers, their clients, and have started making developments that make it easier to do work like I do.
Let's go back to the World Cafe topic. I'm really interested in finding out more about how actually that worked in that online environment, because you said you started like many years ago, even before Zoom was on the market. So that's before 2015, maybe.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, a couple of years before that.
Combined. I started in 2009. Wow. Maybe 2008. Mm-hmm. I started working with mashups.
More than 10 years ago. And how did that actually look like? And then how did this develop over time?
This is very, very embarrassing because it just shows how crazy I was. I think the very first online World Cafe was on Skype. And we had this incredibly complicated system rigged where we had a large group Skype that had a host. Then we had, when we were ready to break into small groups, we had a number, I think at that point there were something like 30 people in the World Cafe, and so we had 8 people who were able to manage the technology in those small groups. So 8 kind of tech hosts that basically created rooms for each of those 4 people to gather. And then, but they were in a back channel communication with me as the overall host. And at the end of the 20 minutes, each round of conversation is 20 minutes, we sent out a message to everyone. Everyone came back to the whole group.
Mm-hmm.
And meanwhile, we had set a whole calendar or a whole schedule up for the tech hosts. And they had the names of the next 4 people that they were going to invite into their room.
Oh, wow.
It was really complicated. And, you know, so we kept going back and forth from the large group to individual small groups that rotated each time. So I had to find and train 8 people who could manage this. The second one we did, the second online World Cafe we did, was even crazier and even more complicated because it was a hybrid. Pardon me. It was a hybrid on Skype. The thing we had just gone through on Skype, in the room, in a room in Halifax, Nova Scotia, in Canada, and in Second Life, which is a user-generated virtual reality space that we did the same thing with. We had to have individual tech people at each of the tables. So it was, and then there was a funny thing that happened in that one, which was, in order to make it a hybrid, there was a sense that we were all doing the same thing. So what was happening in Second Life was projected onto the wall mm-hmm. in the room in Halifax, as was the list of people at Skype. And in Skype, they had a link to what was a visual from Second Life and a link to a visual in the room in Halifax. The people in Halifax were looking at the visual on the wall of what was happening in Second Life, and it looked so cool to them that a bunch of them got out their laptops and joined Second Life, just kind of ad hoc, and showed up at this World Cafe, which was, if you know anything about Second Life, you'll know that you need a little bit of basic, a little small basic skill set to be able to even move around. And this was a highly complicated situation where if we had more people, we would need more tech hosts. And it was hilarious because people were like walking into each other, and we were adding them to rooms so that there were, tables, so that there were kind of too many people at each table. Anyway, it sounds like a disaster, and somehow it worked and was just super fun and super exciting. And, you know, it was like, even now I would hesitate to do something so complex, 15 years later. And at the time I just sort of blundered into it, and it, like beginner's luck, it actually worked somehow.
Oh, I have so many questions on that. So the first one is, So you kept, or the initial idea was to keep the group separate, right? To have a Skype World Cafe, to have a physical World Cafe, and to have one in Second Life. But people would actually see what's going on in the different media, correct?
Yeah. Yes. And it was, they were separate in their environments, but they were together in the process. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So the initial welcome and orientation, the what we call etiquette and netiquette in World Cafe, which is just giving people a sense of what we're going to do and how we're going to do it, and an invitation into another way of being together, another way of listening to each other, another way of speaking to each other. That was all given to people at the same time through the room. So the people on Skype got to hear that, and the people in Second Life got to hear that. And then we did the quest. We used the same questions in each of the different places, and we did a shared harvest, what we call a harvest, which is where people feedback their discoveries and what it is that they've, you know, their aha moments or their learnings and so on. So we got to cross-pollinate that across all three locations.
So interesting, because last week I talked with Silke Freigang, who is responsible for smart learning environments at Bosch. And there we also talked about how to best combine physical environments with digital environments. But in that case, on the topic of Internet of Things, which is for sure something completely different. But here we also have another use case of how you can combine physical and digital environments. Really, really interesting. My question is, why did you do that? Like, why did you create that complexity? Was it just an experiment, or were you afraid at that time?
Actually, it was a client request. Mm-hmm. And I would say that the interest in hybrid events is growing. There's more and more interest in hybrid events. In that case, and this is quite a long time ago, the client was called Alia. It was a summer school mm-hmm. that happened every single year for many, many years. And the summer school was going on in Halifax, Nova Scotia for that year. But they wanted to include everybody who had been part of the summer school over the years. And it had been going already for almost 20 years. So it happened that a bunch of them had a presence on Second Life already. So that was already a place where we could meet to do that, mm-hmm. For them to join in the session in Halifax. And the others that weren't proficient in Second Life had access to Skype. So it was a client request, and we just made it work for them.
That's so interesting, because they were actually trying to get everybody together, but yes. Those people that were physically there should still meet. And I think that's also something I have learned from lots of meetings in my previous company, that it's really difficult if most of the people are in the room and there is only one joining, like from somewhere else via Skype. But as soon as you have groups of people, like a couple of them sitting in a room, a couple of people maybe doing the video conferencing, then it can work pretty well.
Yeah.
Then people are not left out.
Yeah. Cool.
Really, really interesting. What I would like to know more about is the really cool and crazy stuff, the Second Life stuff. because you told me that you have done really pretty quite some World Cafes in Second Life, and not only in this complex combined environment but also separate.
Yeah.
How does it work?
Well, let me back up a moment and say why use Second Life. Because yeah.
Good one.
in part because Second Life is a user-built environment. And one of the things I didn't say when I was talking about what I do and my fascination, my passion is for a human-centered online experience, but also an earth-connected one, an earth-connected internet. because Second Life is a user-generated environment, you can literally create whatever environment you can imagine. And the environments that I was creating on Second Life when I was doing this work there, and even to this day, are very nature-based. So that when you're in that environment, you're surrounded by, you're surrounded by a simulation of nature, of the natural world. And if you know anything about the science of imagination, and Second Life is a big boost to imagination, because you don't have to just imagine it. It's right there. It's all around you. You can see it. You can, see wind blowing through grasses. You can hear the sound of birds in the trees. You are immersed in the natural world in a more direct way than, at least in the experience of the natural world, in a more direct way than you could possibly be anywhere else online, the internet. So that was, that inspiration to make the natural world as present in the experience as possible. It sounds a little ironic to go to the most, the most technology to find the simplest connection with the earth, but I found that to be a really, place is always an important part of whatever it is you're doing. So in your classroom, in a world cafe, it's the environment that you're working in has a role almost equivalent to your facilitation. It's your, in World Cafe, we talk about it as hospitable space. So it's not just psychological safe space, creative space online. It's also physical. And so is there natural light coming in? Is there, are the seats comfortable? Or is there enough space between the tables? All of that. And, so I pay attention to that when I'm working online, whether it's in Second Life or whether it's in Zoom or whether it's in a website or, wherever it is. And Second Life made it very, very easy to do that. And were you asking about the technical, how you do it?
No, it was more about how did you design this experience? Like what I understood from our previous conversation was that you were building a kind of forest in there. With tables in the forest. And then how does it work? Like people, they log into Second Life and they are sitting in front of their computers and then they move through that virtual world, right?
Yeah. So it depends on, depending on how familiar people are with Second Life, there are a number of ways you could do it. Taking the premise that people aren't at all familiar with Second Life, what I've done is create avatars, which are the forms that human beings inhabit as they come into that world. And you can create them to be however you want them to be and get very creative with it. But I've pre-created a number of avatars and they're sitting at tables in Second Life. And these tables are situated in a forest. So there's trees all around and there's squirrels running around and deer. And because it's Second Life and you can have whatever you want, there are all kinds of, I think there's a tiger that walks around and is very happy playing with the deer. And
very playful, very, very playful.
It's very, very playful.
I'm really looking forward to our demo in a couple of weeks.
Yeah, me too. Mm. Yeah. So they just inhabit that space and they have, and I use Zoom. Mm-hmm. To give them breakout spaces, so private spaces that they can have the conversation at those tables.
Ah, so you're combining Zoom with Second Life. Mm-hmm. Uh-huh, okay, that's interesting.
Yeah, you always would have to, because if people were very experienced in Second Life, you wouldn't have to. But if you're going on the premise that people are new to Second Life, then you need to help them. And that's a much easier way to do it.
Do you also use Second Life for different scenarios or only for World Cafes?
I've used it for trainings, different kinds of trainings. Oh, so courses that I've offered there.
But mainly you're doing your courses in Zoom, as I understood, correct?
Yes. These days I'm doing the courses in Zoom, and also with the LMS or learning management system for times in between the real-time sessions on Zoom.
Okay, so to provide material, additional videos, or whatever people would need, right? Mm-hmm. And you already said one key success factor for creating engaging online experiences is the space, setting the space, making it really nice. What else? Like two more points. Like what would be the three top points?
So I think offering opportunities for participation, for engagement, really, so that it's not a one-to-many experience of somebody in front of the room giving a bunch of information. That's not how people learn.
How do you do that?
How do I do that? Mm-hmm. I give them just enough information to kind of ignite their own excitement and interest, and then I put them in breakout rooms and let them talk about those and then bring back the questions that emerged in those small groups, give them an opportunity to respond to each other. But I'm always there. I can always pipe in with a prompting question or a little bit more information that will take us to the next level of peer learning and peer connection. So that's giving people the opportunity to learn from and with each other, but also the opportunity to be part of it, to participate, and not just be a passive receptacle.
Mm-hmm. What would be one more point for one key success factors for really good engaging online experiences? Do you have one more?
Well, I think those were two. That was actually two. So one was in giving opportunities for participation. Absolutely. And then the other was encouraging peer exchange. Mm-hmm. So they're kind of different. I mean, they can overlap, but they're kind of different. So you can go with the participatory piece without, which in itself makes a huge difference, to just get people participating rather than simply listening. And in other ways than just, here's your assignment. Okay, you heard the information, here's your assignment, but really involve them in the process as you go along. And there's a million ways to do that. So that's a big plus to help people learn. And then the other I would say is give them opportunities to engage with each other, peer engagement.
What I also learned from you or read in your article, The Art of Online Hosting, which I really liked, was that it's really, really important to be connecting to the participants as a trainer in a way that is that drives or transmits empathy and warmth. Because how do you do that? Like, do you have any top tip?
Well, so that's part of a whole piece that's something quite important in online engagement, and that is that as the host or the teacher or the leader of a meeting or something, you have an enormous amount of power, really, an enormous amount of impact. So the way you speak to people, the tone that you use, the way you, I mean, I always start whatever I'm doing online, I always come in half an hour early and invite people, anyone who wants to get themselves settled in whatever way, with the technology or just psychically or however, that they come in half an hour early. And then I spend that time greeting the people who are coming in and making them feel welcome and know that they're in a place where they will be heard and is inviting their voice and their presence.
So you greet them one by one. You're greeting them one by
one. I greet them one by one. And then I greet them as in groups. And the other piece besides the warmth and the friendliness and the welcome is a place of presence. Mm-hmm. And really as a teacher, as a leader, embodying the presence that I want to bring forward for each one of them. So I'm really focused on my work. I never multitask or do anything other than engage with the people in front of me.
Mm. Yeah, presence. Yeah, that's a big topic in today's reality, and more even for the participants than for the trainer. But you're modeling what you would like to have from
that. Exactly. That's the key point, is that as the person in front of the room, or it's not even in front of the room, it's in the circle, you have an enormous influence that you need to be very aware of. And it's on many levels. You know, you want to make sure you're heard so that your equipment is working well. You want to make sure that you're seen so that the lighting is working well. All of those things are important, and they impact how other people are experiencing you. And it changes their experience. They sit up straighter. They look around for how can their lighting be better. You have an enormous influence, partly because there's not so much. This is kind of ironic because for some people, there are a lot of distractions online, but in another way of looking at it, there aren't many distractions. They're looking at you.
Mm. Oh, Amy, I could go on forever with this interview because I really love talking to you. But to be mindful of time, I have three final questions that I would like to ask you. The first one would be what is your vision for learning in the future? Like, let's say in 2030, how do you think that learning will develop in the next 10 years, let's say?
Well, I hope that learning will develop in the way that we're talking about, really, that where students are engaged and encouraged to share what they know, because I think this idea of students as empty vessels who need to be filled with knowledge is an idea that's fast disappearing into the past, that they have contribution to make, and if our learning processes can recognize and invite that forward, we'll be learning together in a way that will really amplify what's possible. And also the piece that we just spent quite a lot of time on is paying attention to the environment that you're creating and doing what you can to create a safe and creative space for that kind of to do the kind of work that we want to do together. So,
we have now seen how this is also possible in an online environment, not only in the physical space, right? Mm-hmm. So second question is, which book, blog, or person has inspired you most in the last couple of years? Always looking for new inspiration. So,
I was very inspired by a group of women who came together who work in the field of technology, most of us not as programmers, although myself and one other woman in the group do code, but as women who use technology for human purposes. Mm-hmm. And one of those women, whose name is Nancy White, mm-hmm. has been she's been a wonderful friend and a wonderful inspiration. And she has a blog. Her blog is fullcirc.com. It stands for, her company is Full Circle Associates. Mm-hmm. And it's she's got a wonderful blog that she keeps up, which is unlike me, I've got a wonderful blog, but I don't keep it up, partly because I write in about 6 or 7 different places. But so I pay attention to what she's doing and keep up with her blog. She also wrote a wonderful book, co-wrote a wonderful book called Digital Habitats. Mm-hmm. And she co-wrote that with a gentleman called Etienne Wenger, mm-hmm. A German man who, and the two of them really, really delved into what we're talking about in terms of environment and place, how to create an environment, a habitat in the online sphere.
Great. I will definitely put that into the show notes, and it's already on my reading list. Great. The last question, like, do you have one top tip if one of the people who are listening to us, the L&D professionals, want to start tomorrow with creating engaging online experiences? What would be the top tip? How could they start?
I would say to have some component of real-time engagement. Mm-hmm. Even if you're primarily in working in an LMS or learning management system, even if it's just an opening and a closing session, have a real-time component. And for that, my savior is Zoom. I love Zoom. And right now it can go up to really large numbers on a simple pro account. And and being able to see each other, and with a skillful teacher or host, you can really bring people to life with each other in that environment. So I would say do at least one of those in your course, whatever. Hopefully a lot more of it.
I love that as a last quote, bring people to life together. I really like that. Thank you so much, Amy, for everything, like for taking time for our first meeting, for doing this interview in the podcast. I really appreciate it. I'm so happy I met you. You're a great inspiration for myself. And I wish you all the best. Thank you so much for this interview. Oh,
thank you, Oma. I'm very blessed to have met you and very happy to do this interview, and look forward to the podcast.
Me too.
Wenn euch dieses Interview genauso gut gefallen hat wie mir, dann würde ich mich sehr freuen, wenn ihr es mit anderen Menschen teilt und mir eine Bewertung auf iTunes hinterlasst. Ich freue mich natürlich auch auf jegliche Kommentare zum Podcast und über Anregungen für weitere Interviews. In einem Monat hören wir uns dann wieder bei der nächsten Folge von Inspired Learning in a Digital World. Vielen Dank fürs Zuhören. Bis dahin wünsche ich euch eine tolle und inspirierende Zeit.